Hi, I'm Dr. Akiva Down.
And I'm Rabbi Avi Green.
And welcome to Interesting Questions.
In this podcast, we'll be addressing issues that are philosophical, religious, and psychological in nature.
We will be focusing on that which is considered to be controversial, and there may not be a right or wrong answer. So we are hoping that our discussions will yield more questions for your Shabbos table.
Shavua Tov, and welcome back to Interesting Questions. We are on the fifth parak of Pirkei Avot, the eighth Mishnah. Asara dvarim nivru be'erev Shabbat. There were 10 things that were created on Erev Shabbat, Bein HaShmashot, right between twilight. So this is talking about the very first Shabbat of all time. Right before Shabbat came in, the Mishnah is telling us that there were 10 things that were created. Ve'eluhein, and these are they. Pi ha'aretz, the mouth of the earth. Upi ha'be'er, and the mouth of the well. Pi ha'aton, the mouth of the donkey. V'ha'keshet, and the rainbow. V'haman, and the man. V'hamateh, and the staff. V'hashamir, and the shamir worm. Haktav, the script. V'hamichtav, and the inscription. V'haluchot, and the tablets. V'yesh omrim, and there are those that say, af hamazikin, also destructive spirits. Ukvurato shel Moshe, and the grave of Moshe Rabbeinu. V'elu, and the ram shel Avram Avinu, that Avram, our ancestor, used. V'yesh omrim, and there are those who say, af tzvat bitzvat asuya, tongs for which other tongs needed to be made. So let's take a minute and explain some of the references in this Mishnah before we even go on to some deeper questions. Right? So it is suggesting that these 10 things were created Erev Shabbat of the very first, right before the very first Shabbat, during the first Friday of creation. So the mouth of the earth that opened up for Korach and swallowed he and his family up, and the mouth of the well that provided water and traveled with Bnei Israel in the desert. Pi ha'aton, the mouth of the donkey that spoke to Bilam. V'hakeshet, and the rainbow that Noach saw at the end of the flood. V'haman, and the man that fed Bnei Israel while they were in the desert. V'hamateh, the staff of Moshe. Shamir is the worm that would eat, that could eat rock in order to create smooth stones for the mizbeach, because you were not allowed to use metal objects in creating, in hewing the stone for the mizbeach. The script, haktav, the script refers to literally the Hebrew letters. V'hamichtav, the inscription of the Ten Commandments that was written on the v'haluchot, on the two tablets. And then there are those who say the idea of destructive spirits, the grave of Moshe, the ram that Avraham sacrifices at the end of the Akedat Yitzchak, and some will say tongs, because there's no way to create tongs without first having tongs. And so these are the 10 things that the Mishnah is suggesting were created by Hashem at this time. Akiva, you want to share some thoughts about any of these?
Well, I think one of the first pieces that is important to kind of touch on is the fact of Bein HaShmashot. And the reason why I think the second time where I'm reading this, might be second, might be more, but tonight, yeah, there were 13, 10 things. I say that because I saw Avi counting. But Bein HaShmashot, what's interesting about that is, right, that's a time that we don't really have a definition for exactly. It's this no man's land where we protect Shabbat by bringing it in with the understanding that at the beginning it might already be Shabbos, or towards the end, it might be Shabbos. We know for sure by the end it's Shabbos. But twilight is this interesting and unique time that really has no firm time to account for it. And I think, you know, that Avi, I'm kind of going to toss it back in your direction with the idea of, so we start off saying that at this indiscriminate and undefined period of time, 1310 things were created, and I gotta say, I need you to go over some of this because it just doesn't fit.
So, just to clarify a little bit more, Bein Hashmashot, right, is not a completely undefined time. It is the time when a particular day is turning into the next day. The hard part is we don't know exactly in what moment, right, a Friday turns into Shabbat, or a Shabbat turns into Sunday, or any of those other components. And that's the Bein Hashmashot. It's between the lights, is what it means. And so it is between the time when the sun goes down and when the stars and the moon have risen so that it's clearly night. And so it's this twilight time that is really, yeah, not connected to the books at all, but it's that's really unique and special and in some ways almost miraculous, because it is a transformational time from one to the next. And if you look at the first 10 items, the 10 items that are listed before the V'yesh Omrim, then all of these items are there, and they're all items that if you looked in the Torah, we would go, well, that doesn't make any sense, right? They are in and of themselves miraculous items from the perspective of the Torah, right? So if you're talking about the fact that the earth opened up and swallowed Korach, right? That's not something the earth would normally do. Or that there was a well that would follow around Bnei Israel, or the fact that you have a talking donkey, the rainbow of the time of Noach, the man that would feed the Jewish people, the staff that Moshe had that turned into a snake, the worm that could eat rocks, right? The writing of script, right? The creation of written language, and the idea of what was written on the Luchot, which supposedly was you were able to read it from either side the same way. And it was embedded in the Luchot and the Luchot themselves. So these are all supposed to be somewhat miraculous items. And so the question is, well, what do we do for those of us who, generally speaking, might say, God seems to work through natural means, right? So it says, don't worry. At the beginning of creation, God set aside these special 10 items that really only work through miracle.
So Avi, I guess what I kind of want to pause for a moment right there and ask you is, those are things that we know of now, and there's only one being that knows what is, what was, and what will be, and it seems a little presumptuous to, and we see that in the fact that there's 1310 items, that how can we say that there were only 10 things? That's what we can comment on and what we know of. And I think that the whole idea of what this is saying is perhaps that there were, as you said, there were miracle or miraculous items that HaKadosh Baruch Hu already knew that at some point the plan was to implement them, which I can get behind that part, except for the fact that this is all we know about, and to presume that we know any more is very presumptuous.
So I believe it's the Rambam who talks about the idea of when God creates, as opposed to when man creates. When God creates, God can create what we use the fancy word ex nihilo, right? Something from nothing, whereas human beings can only create something from something else, right? We can take wood and we can turn it into a cabinet or a bed or a box, whatever we might need. What we can't do is take nothingness and turn it into something. That is something that only God can do. And so the idea is that these items were created in that way. They were part of the, they had to be part of the creation of the world because they were created in this way. To me, it is not surprising that people try to tack on other items like the ram from Avraham, or the grave of Moshe, or even the idea of tongs, because you have to have tongs to make other tongs. What amazes me is that there aren't more things that are, I would think, might have been included in this. In other words, if you're talking about the crossing of the sea, why isn't that included here as something that God would have created? In other words, you would think that there are other, I don't want to say more impressive or larger miracles, because I don't know that that's a good way to measure it, but that there would be other miracles from the Torah and from Chazal that would be included here as being those things that God created at the time. And so it doesn't surprise me that there are, as you said, 10, 13 things. What surprises me is that the list isn't significantly longer. And so I think what I would like to suggest, and again, this is based on my understanding of Rambam, is that generally speaking, we say that God works through nature, except in the cases where the Torah tells us it specifically is not natural.
Right? Like the splitting of the sea.
So it doesn't seem to say that. In other words, it says God reaches out God's hand to create the splitting of the sea, but it doesn't, if we look at the reading in 2 weeks, we'll see it doesn't necessarily say, right, that it was miraculous. Whereas some of these would seem to go, right? In other words, might what happened be explained through natural means? It might. Might the plagues be explained through natural means? They might.
But Hebrew letters are...
The idea that... And so what I think the perspective I would like to take on this Mishnah is that the rabbis are using a method connected to Midrash Agadah here, to the idea of telling a rabbinic story where they're trying to teach a lesson. And that lesson is that there are certain things that only God can do, and that it is necessary to believe in God and to believe in God's miracles in order for us to be able to understand, because there are certain things that just cannot be understood.
So Avi, I'm gonna ask you to kind of put this together for us then, because I can get behind, I suppose, the idea of the lesson being that there are only things that only God can create, and it does, I suppose, fall in line with all of Perek Hey. It fits. So. But why here? Why when the entirety of Pirkei Avot is being canonized, this seems like a good time to ask, why is Pirkei where it is? It seems like it could be somewhere else, possibly. Maybe it would be better as Perek Vav. I mean, we haven't gotten there yet, but please.
So I'm not sure I can really say why the Mishnah was ordered the way it was. That was Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi in 200 of the Common Era. I'm sure he had an organizational structure that made sense to him. I can talk about why all of these Mishnayot, Aleph, Bet, Gimel, Dalet, He, Vav, Zayin, and Chet seem to be put together, there is an organizational structure. I can't say why they're here as opposed to the next parak, right? And the organizational structure here, as loose as it may sound, is that they all are talking about 10 things. And so this is a very typical way for rabbinic literature to organize things, right? Here are several lists of 10 things. Or if we go to the Gemara, there's a Gemara in Megillah that talks about there's no difference between X and Y except for Z. And they do that, and they run through a list of about 7 different items. There's no difference between X and Y except for Z. There's no difference between A and B except for C. There's no difference between D and F, except, right, so on and so forth. And the only thing that puts them together is the fact that they all have that same structure. So here, the structure is that they all have 10 things.
But Avi, I actually would slightly disagree. Yes, there's a 10 that's common, but I think what I'm reading as the penultimate continuing theme throughout this entire parak is the idea of what was destined to be and created by HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and it just so happens that there are sets of 10, but the fact is it seems like the overall lesson of this parak is that there are things that we are not meant to understand and things that we are not meant to know about, but that there is an order and a method. And that is from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, which is why I would suggest that, you know, in the very beginning, when we're talking about three things on which the earth stands, it seems to me that it would make sense to maybe we would have to have Perek Hey where Perek Aleph is, and Aleph would have to be Bet, and so on and so forth. But it seems to me that one of the very first things that we could potentially be able to glean from what we learn from those wise individuals is, hey, HaKadosh Baruch Hu has a plan, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu knows what's going on, and there are things that are done that we see, even though we see them as miracles, perhaps, maybe the truth is that they're part of God's plan, and we see themes and we see patterns, but the ultimate pattern and the ultimate plan is that which is God's. Which I think is a wonderful lesson to either, again, put at the very beginning as almost a prelude to, by the way, then there's three things and so on and so forth, and be wise and be useful with your time and yada yada, or even at the end as a culmination. And it just seems odd to have it in Perek Hey. We've already bought in by now. And yet we're not quite, I feel, complete enough if there's another Perek to be able to say, ah, I get it.
So first of all, I want to say that I love that you see that deeper meaning. It's part of the reason that I enjoy doing this chavrusa with you, because I was definitely not seeing it at that deeper level, so I appreciate you pointing it out. And I think you're correct. There are some who said Pirkei Avot would only had 5 parakim, and the 6th parak was either a way that the 5th parak was divided or was added later on. You'll see it's significantly shorter. And so this idea of, you know, putting that God is the ultimate here at the end and sort of as sort of a wrap-up might make sense. We'll have to follow along with that as we move on. But at this point, I think we are good with Mishnah Chet. We can move on to Mishnah Tet. Shiva Dvarim begolem v'shiva b'chacham. There are 7 things that characterize an uncultivated person and 7 of a wise person. Chacham eno medaber lifnei mi shegadol mimenu b'chachma uv'minyan. A wise person does not speak before someone who is greater in knowledge or greater in followers. So that's not social media followers, but that is students. Ve'eno nichnas letoch divrei chavero, and they don't interrupt in the middle of the words of their friend or colleague. Ve'eno nivhal lahashiv, and they do not rush to respond to things. Shoel ke'inyan umeshiv kahalacha. They ask a question that is relevant to the subject, and they reply accurately. Va'omer al roshan, va'omer al rishon, rishon, va'lacharon, acharon. And they talk about the first things first, and the latter things last. Va'ama shelo shama, omer lo shamati. And on something that he doesn't know about, he says, I don't know, I haven't heard. Umode al ha'emet, and he acknowledges the truth. V'chilufehen begolem, and the reverse is true of someone who is uncultured. So let's start with the idea that this golem, right, which some people may be familiar with as a term from a different setting, from the idea of a golem being a almost like a Frankenstein's monster type of entity that was brought to life. It uses the same concept, but it's because that was an uncultivated, a soulless entity, right? And so it uses the same etymology.
I was just going to point out, I know you see how excited I am, that it makes a heck of a lot more sense also why the creature from The Lord of the Rings was called Gollum now, because an uncultivated, unenriched soul, I like it, I appreciate that bit of information. I never would have made that connection without this particular Mishnah, I think.
And then if we go back to the seven things that a wise person does, I think that if, as a parent, these are lessons I would hope my child would learn, to be a well-cultured person in society, right? That you don't interrupt somebody who's smarter than you or has a greater following than you, right? That's being an upstart. And you don't interrupt someone while they're speaking. And the idea that you shouldn't respond impetuously, but rather that you can think about your words and respond thoughtfully. That, you know, if you're having a conversation with someone, the questions you ask should be relevant. And accurate when you respond. The idea that, you know, when somebody asks you a two-part question, you answer the first part first and the second part second. The idea that if you don't know something, you admit to not knowing. And finally, the idea that you acknowledge the truth, and I think this is really not just saying you acknowledge the truth, but you acknowledge the truth when you're wrong. Right, that when someone points out that they have bested you in a discussion, that you acknowledge that you made a mistake, that you were incorrect in your thinking, that you're going to have to rethink it, that maybe you really didn't win that election.
You know, Avi, what I really appreciate about, well, really a great number of things in this particular Mishnah, but the fact that we have here, again, a lesson for how to approach interactions, and we saw a lot of that in Perek Dalet, and what was great, I think, is that if you combine these two, because in Perek Dalet, a lot of it suggested, well, you never know if somebody has something good to say, so you should be listening and understanding that just because someone is seemingly unknowledgeable because you've judged their vase, but not what's in the vase, or perhaps the jug and not what's in the jug, it's beautiful because it kind of suggests, hey, this is how one should be developing things like who has more wisdom, who has more of those who are following. And I would hope that perhaps we can very much stress the importance of this not being based off of social media followers, because God forbid. But just the fact of how it's a wonderful way and a wonderful way to establish what is important for dialogue. And I want to kind of jump to the end real quick, because this idea of acknowledging the truth. And we haven't talked too much about the whole concept of, well, today's society. But I think it's so important to stress the acknowledgement of the truth. Because in a day and age where we use the words his truth or her truth or their truth, it really is important to sometimes take a step back and say, no, the truth. This is not Star Wars. This is not I told you the truth from a certain point of view. This is, there is a truth, and it's the truth, and in intelligent dialogue, it is important to be able to say, I hear what's true. We may not like it, right? We certainly have plenty of history that we should be learning from and figuring out how to do things differently, but we can't change the truth. We can't change what happened. We can just learn from it and grow from it. And I think that we really can pull from this very Mishnah with the last couple of words in it, Wadeh al ha'emet, and acknowledge the truth. And we can use that to better what we have for the future. I think I would like to actually kind of bring this into your question around the Shabbos table, unless, Avi, there's something more that you had to share. No, I'm getting the go-ahead. Okay. So really, the question then comes in is, I would like you to ask everybody to think about a time that they were able to say that they didn't know something. And share that. Share that with your family. Share that with your loved ones or whoever's around your Shabbos table, because there's such amazing value to having the confidence and the power and the ability to say, I don't know, and know that that's a healthy and responsible and appropriate thing to say. And then the other challenge, the other piece of that is, how are you going to teach your family, your friends, your loved ones, whoever's at your Shabbos table, how are you going to teach how to acknowledge the truth, even if the truth is painful, even if the truth is something we need to learn from and do better from, but how are you going to teach how to acknowledge the truth?
So I thought you were going to add to that, Akiva, right, to acknowledge a time you were wrong and share that with family. Because that can also be a critical learning component, right? Especially for children to see that parents are willing to admit when that they make mistakes and that they learn from those mistakes.
Wonderful.
Wishing you a Shavua Tov.
Thank you for listening. If you'd like to reach us, you can reach us at iqdiscuss@gmail.com. We look forward to hearing from you and responding.